Over the past 75 years, more than 10,000 chemicals have entered our food supply, but the EU allows just 300 additives. At Thrive Market, we prioritize quality, banning over 1,000 ingredients found in conventional grocery stores. Our Healthy Swap scanner helps you find better versions of your pantry essentials without the junk, dyes, or fillers, and everything is delivered right to your doorstep. So shop at a grocery store that actually cares about your health at thrivemarket.com/get started for 30% off your first order and a free $60 gift.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is now time!
The best there is, best there was, and the best there ever will be! And you know it!
With a tear in my eye!
The queen of the crop, acknowledge me!
Good afternoon, everybody. Episode 369 of Top Rope Nation. Ryan Drosty, Justin Joint, Jesse Velasquez here to talk AEW Worlds, and we're going to review the show, the results from the show, long-term direction for All Elite Wrestling coming out of the big event in Orlando last night. You know, we're used to doing shows at night, but once in a while we get these afternoon and morning shows in, which is kind of fun. Hopefully get some listeners from across the pond checking in here. It's not too late over in the UK right now. Justin Joint, how are you doing today?
Pretty good, outside of, you know, the Top Rope Nation and Squared Circle Gazette derby was this morning with Tottenham facing Wolverhampton, and the Spurs shit the bed at the last minute, so that was not ideal. But pretty darn good besides from that.
Good, good. Do you have anything in the glass? I mean, it's early, but...
I've got a shitty LaCroix. I've been trying to cut soda out of my diet, and I'm trying this shit out. Not good. Not fucking good, Ryan.
Well, it's a noble goal if you can do it, sir, so... Hey, look at this. I got a British Bulldog shirt on, so I am sporting this with hopes that our UK friends... Check out the show today live. Justin's got a great looking hat on, Justin. Look at that thing. Beautiful. Mm-hmm.
Big fan. Very nice stitching on it.
It was a few years ago. I mean, this was probably at least three, actually probably more like 4 years ago, something like that. I had ordered a small batch of Top Rope Nation hats. In fact, it's behind me over here, snapbacks, but we haven't done an order since. Well, now, you know, I finally found a merch site where we can have them made on demand, and they are stitched. It's not screen printed. High quality. Justin got one. I got one. We actually adapted the design a little bit from the first batch that we got in, and I think this one looks a little bit better. Justin picked the blue color out for the top part of Top Rope Nation, and it really pops. Looks good on camera.
Hell yeah.
Great advertisement. Jesse, how are you doing?
369. Damn, you're fine.
I thought about saying that in the intro too.
I'm doing pretty well. I'm on borrowed time, and I actually have an NA here. I truly need it after the morning that I've had. So borrowed time because little man is preoccupied and he's behaving, which is the usual for him. But when he's not, I mean, you know how it is.
Oh yeah, I definitely know how it is. Here's what's in my glass, a little McDonald's Diet Coke.
Ooh.
Little daddy daycare right now with the three children, and two of them are napping right now, so hopefully we keep this volume at a reasonable noise in the background as we go. No Royal Rumbles upstairs while we're on the air.
What's your go-to McDonald's order?
Usually Big Mac, but I did Quarter Pounder today.
Ah, switching it up.
Yeah, switched it up. I mean, basically, like, I don't know, similar, less bun, I don't know. Similar amount of meat. Watching my calories, you know. Switch from the Big Mac to the Quarter Pounder. Very healthy. Very healthy indeed.
I thought you're supposed to switch on January 1st, not December 29th.
That's true.
That's a myth in my world.
Let's see. Who's checking in the chat? We got a few people right now. Sean is here. Good to see Sean. Happy New Year. Yes, indeed. Coming at you later this week with 2025. It is. It's good to have the crew back, because last week it was just Justin and Jesse. The week before that, was it just two of us? I can't even remember at this point.
It was you, myself, Jay Schmitz, and Frank.
That's right. That's right. So it's been a little while. Been a few weeks since us three were together. So, yeah, And we see John Hope in the chat. Hope the TRN crew had a great Christmas. I did. You guys?
Yeah, no complaints. The kids are happy. That's all that matters.
Very nice.
That is exactly all that matters. I'm legit looking at his two best presents right now in front of me. That's two giant Hot Wheels tracks.
Oh, nice. Ooh, nice.
Very good. Any wrestling gifts before we get into AEW here?
I'm still waiting on the figures I ordered back in like October or something. They're supposed to be delivered mid-December, and it got pushed back to January, maybe. So he would have gotten some figurines, but not so much.
I got one of my daughters a Britt Baker figure. That's my oldest. She really likes her. My middle child got a Tiffany Stratton figure. She loves Tiffy Time. And my youngest got a Bret Hart figure. She loves Bret Hart. What can I say?
Oh, yeah.
Great father here. So
save the best for last.
That's right. That's right. Guys, let us know your grade for AEW World's End as we get into talking about this show. As always, I do want to say really quickly, if you're not already subscribed to this channel or if you haven't hit the thumbs up button, please do so. It will help us out a lot. In that YouTube algorithm, if you're on the podcast feed, drop us the 5-star review. Spotify, Apple, all that stuff helps. You can find the link to our Patreon page here in broadcast description. Patreon is the best way to support Top Rope Nation. You can get bonus podcasts. We're closing in on 170 bonus shows behind the Patreon wall. Sign up for $5, gets you access. Try it out for a month, cancel if you don't like it, but you'll get full access with that 1 month $5 joining. And you can hear the latest edition of Top Rope Nation Classics, which recently released in podcast form, also in video form, with Kyle Ross making his return for TRN Classics as we reviewed Survivor Series 92. So if you want to hear Kyle back on the airwaves with Justin and myself, you can find that on Patreon. Jesse's got another episode of Top Rope Nation Unplugged dropping for patrons probably later this week as well. So new content going up all the time. In fact, there is a TRN extra last night around midnight after I got done on Bleacher Report with my instant reactions to World's End, about a 34-minute podcast that patrons only got access to last night. That usually happens the night of the pay-per-view. So if you want access to that, again, patreon.com/Top Rope Nation. Justin Joint, give me your grade, A through F, AEW World's End.
It's tough with AEW these days because, like, you almost are always grading it against their previous pay-per-views, which isn't always fair, especially with the high quality that AEW tends to put out in their pay-per-views. This one, World's End, had a match of the year candidate. It had Kenny Omega return. It had Adam Copeland returned. It had, you know, three solid, you know, 4-star matches on it, but it still felt like there was something missing coming out of the show. But you know, I'd still go B+, you know, I mean, it hits a lot of the check marks that we're looking for from pay-per-view. So just kind of in a vacuum by itself, I was pretty entertained from start to finish.
All right, Jesse, you?
So I've only caught 50%. It was the back half. I have read about the first half. So I'm going to try to accumulate it all together. B+ is what it sounds like for me right now. I felt that if the very end of the show had landed for me, I would have probably thrown it in the A- category.
Oh, okay.
And I'll get into that a little bit later. But the second half that I saw, I was very, very impressed, especially with Mercedes and Statlander, which with that one, Ospreay and Okada, those are my two favorites that I've seen so far.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I'll give you my grade in a second. Let's hit some of these chats right now. Sean checking in, who was on PW Torch with Frank. You guys check that out. I saw the link was posted in the Facebook group this morning. Sean said B- on the show. He said, and with the super chat, thank you, Sean. He said, honestly, thought Fletcher should have won the Continental Classic. Yeah, we'll get into that discussion for sure. Because I've seen a lot of dialogue and back and forth on social media this morning about that result. And, you know, with Ospreay not winning, whether Okada was the right decision or not, I'm sure we are going to hit that. I think there's definitely an argument to be made for that. I think one of the problems was the way that the bracket turned out, though. and who he had to face to get to the finals and the prior match and everything. So we'll get to that in a little bit. But yeah, I'm not totally opposed to that idea. John Hope, B plus for me, three incredible matches, but a couple of matches stopped from being top tier. I'm going to be the highest, I guess. I'm going A minus on this one.
Oh, all right.
Yeah, just because,
I like it.
Like you said, Justin, there was a match of the year contender, and I always say that I only go A if there's a match of the year contender. This show had it. In fact, this show had two really, really highly. Mm-hmm. I mean, I haven't done my grades yet that I'll post on Patreon, but for sure two matches over four stars on it. I kind of feel like, and I was on Blue Sky skeeting about this morning. I feel that AEW is held to like such higher standards than WWE. And it's kind of ridiculous. Like AEW is expected to be flawless, you know, to get that A rating. Mm-hmm. If a WWE show had two matches as good as those Ospreay matches last night, everybody would be giving it an A, right?
That's a great point.
I mean, I can't remember the last two big returns. And two big returns. Yeah. So, I mean, it also had the moments on top of the matches. Were there some matches that were, you know, just average? Absolutely. And I know people are kind of split on how the show ended and everything. But like, yeah, I mean, if we're being fair here, if this is WWE and they have 2 4 plus star matches, which I can't remember the last time a WWE pay-per-view had two matches that I would rate over four stars. Mm-hmm. I feel like it's been a while. I mean, that's an A show 100%. So it feels like AEW all the time has to be flawless. You know, I was on Blue Sky. I was talking about how people tend to have this idea that if they don't like something or they just think it's just average, that it sucked, when it's like, we're just surrounded. And this goes to the main event. I thought the main event was fine. It was not a bad match. It wasn't like an outstanding great match of the year contender or anything, but I think it was kind of what everyone expected going in. It wasn't a bad match. So if you say the main event sucked, I'm like, it's hard for me to take you seriously. I'm sorry. And that's just to my point that there is so much great wrestling out there today, mm-hmm. that when people see something that, especially on AEW, that's not like a 4+ star match, they're like, oh, that was terrible. When in fact it was a good match. You know, we just have really, really high standards for AEW. You know, I was talking about this with our friend Jay, who was on the show a couple of weeks ago last night, and when our kids were hanging out, and he said that, you know, with the attendance factor, with WWE running a house show in Orlando the same night that AEW has a pay-per-view in Orlando, although they're not worried about AEW, of course not. They just happened to schedule it, you know, the same night. And they just happened to release that old ECW show with RVD and Kurt Angle that everyone wants to see on YouTube at the same time, you know, whatever. There's nothing to do with AEW. They had to, you know, they had what, 6,800 people in that arena, the UCF arena last night. I mean, they earned every single one of those ticket sales. Mm-hmm. And they just have to do everything perfect for everyone to think AEW is doing good. With WWE, I mean, they draw on the brand. It's a hot brand right now. It's a legacy brand. And they, I don't know how many tickets they sold, 9,000-10,000 for that house show, something like that. A lot. A bigger venue, bigger arena. AEW pretty much filled up what they had for sale in the smaller venue. But I mean, they just have these heightened expectations, to my original point, and it's really hard to live up to that. So I'm pretty confident in giving this an A minus, I think. That's where I'm at on it.
You have changed my mind. I'm going to go A minus. You totally convinced me. That was fantastic, man.
And you soon I will be running for political office. Thank you.
We could use you right now, Ryan.
This state could use someone different in the governor's office. I'll just say that. No. But no, that's not for me, I don't think. But yeah, let's look at, hey, look, Rick Skelton in the chat. Hope you guys are well. Can't hang around long, I'm afraid. Sent my brother a TRN shirt and Rocks glasses for Christmas.
Nice.
He loved them. Shout out Sean Skelton. Great quality. Happy New Year. Good to see Rick here in the chat room. Thank you for the purchase, sir. Appreciate that.
Hey, Rick Skelton, how you doing?
Yeah. Sean said, I'm not like that, but I see your point to what I was just talking about. The build going into the show just hurts it for me. John Hope, I haven't scored a modern WWE show more than a B minus. Fair. And then Sean, I call WWE matches bad as well. Their builds to me are better. Okay. And that's an arguable point. Absolutely. Let's talk about Ospreay because, I think Jesse is our resident Will Ospreay expert here. You haven't seen the opening match then, which was just unreal. Opening a show with all that blood, with Kyle Fletcher and Will Ospreay out there again, and they put on like a 4+ star match yet again, and then everyone else, Justin, on this show has to follow that.
Yeah.
I mean, how are you feeling if you're Okada and Ricochet going out there right after these guys?
Well, I think there's a reason that, their match was a lot shorter than the opener.
Yeah.
It's just an impossible task. But I do think that was the right order in which to do it.
Yeah.
Recently, I was going to say, they've actually been putting the second match on the card as like the hot one. They'll put one that's pretty much worthy of being the opener, but then they'll follow up with one that just destroys that one, and they just keep going. But I think, you can't really argue starting with the best wrestler in the world.
Yeah.
Ever to open a show. It is, especially if he's not going to close it, and for how long that is remains to be seen.
Yeah. So when you look at those two in tandem, you got Ricochet, Okada. I didn't too much have a problem with the route they went with the winners here, with Okada and Ospreay winning and getting that great match later in the semi-main spot. I do want to say that Ricochet's heel turn, I have really enjoyed. Him up at the Hammerstein, getting all that heat and the toilet paper thrown at him and stuff on TV recently was outstanding stuff. I think it's freshened him up a lot. You've got, when he first came in, he still kind of had the WWE paint on him. He just felt pretty much like the same thing he was in WWE. But the longer he's been in AEW now, a couple of months, he started kind of regain a little bit of the indie Ricochet. Like that first Ospreay match he had did not live up to our hype at all. And then when they ran it back, it was better the second time at Hammerstein for sure. And he's kind of growing into this new heel role. Do you guys like heel Ricochet?
This is easily the most interested I've been in Ricochet in years, probably since he first got to NXT. He just feels completely fresh to me. He's really embraced this character being a heel. He's actually surprisingly really good at wrestling as a heel, being that he's never really had to before. And then also I've seen people online like trying to say that AEW is burying him with all this toilet paper stuff, especially on this pay-per-view with Swerve. And it's like, I couldn't disagree more. Ricochet's just his reactions to it all and his crowd participation are just both amazing. And he's more interesting. And the toilet paper thing is actually a fun little unique gimmick that's just all for him now. And I'm really excited to see what he's going to do going forward. And that's something I would not have said about Ricochet since, like I said, his NXT run.
He's a heel Carlton Banks. If you're a Fresh Prince of Bel-Air fan, you can totally see it in the mannerisms and just how he carries himself. He's got a little, like I said, he's flicking off crowds and just kind of, in a nerdy way. It's hitting for me for sure. One thing I'll say though is, and I'm going to apologize to Trevor Mann, AKA Ricochet right now. And they're calling him Trevor, by the way, for whatever reason, I don't know, in kayfabe. I apologize to him for saying that at Wrestle Dream he peaked in that triple threat match in AEW. I said he had nowhere to go but down. And he's reinvented his character, and it's going to be exciting to see where he lands from here. I mean, obviously, we're looking at a feud with Swerve Strickland. That could tie into the Hurt Syndicate.
Yes.
So lots of ways to go for Ricochet.
Yeah. Great point. We got Tiger Rick, Mr. Skelton himself, checking in the chat again. He says, Hammerstein was a triumph. Hope they go back every year. Yeah, I think they should go multiple times a year.
Yeah,
at least every 6 months. You can make the argument even more than that. I mean, that is what we have been preaching on the show for a long time. Run these smaller, unique venues. They're going to start doing that now, which I think is a really good idea. And yeah, the show it felt so cool to see that event in that legendary venue. I know it was a really good experience for the fans. Our friend Andrew Zarian was there. I was talking to him about it too. And his only concern was that he was surprised they didn't put a few more rows of seats in there, because if you look at the old ECW shows, they packed way more people on the floor than they had there. And they could have sold more tickets. I think, you know, they filled up everything that they put on sale. So maybe next time they'll put a few more tickets for sale. But yeah, it was great venue. Really like what they're doing with Ricochet. You know, two outstanding matches, 16-20 in the opener, I believe, about 13 minutes in the second one. So you get Okada and Ospreay later in the night in the semi-main, and they ended up going just a hair under 20 minutes. And I mean, you got Ospreay out there with a huge bandage on his head just from bleeding earlier. At one point in time, you had Okada take that off, and he wore like an armband. You have, of course, Ospreay working from underneath most of the match, a slower pace than what we saw earlier. Since you did see this one, Jesse, give me your thoughts on that one.
My first initial thoughts were, why didn't Will take a shower?
Because that doesn't look cool.
He looked like he had just gotten into a back alley scrap and just walked to the ring. He sold it even when he was going through his music, trying to climb the ropes. It took him some energy to muster up. He couldn't even throw his hands up in the air. So maybe he oversold it. But yes. Watching Ospreay and Okada wrestle earlier, that's what I was looking down at. Some of my notes from earlier in the year, Battle in the Valley, I believe it was one of Ospreay's last New Japan matches. It followed a lot of their same idiosyncrasies with Okada trying to slow it down, Ospreay trying to speed it up, Excalibur telling the story of how well they know each other, because of course 2015 they wrestled, and then Ospreay ends up going to New Japan, joins Chaos, kickstarts his career. I thought overall as a whole though, this was the old Okada. He hasn't wrestled like this since against Pac. We had been wondering like where is this mystique of Kazuchika Okada? He found it. Because on that Stormbreaker, I believe, or the Tiger Driver, what was it? It was a Stormbreaker. When he countered that into an arm drag,
yes,
I was like, where did you pull that off from? And then they hit the ropes and hits the Rainmaker. These two have tremendous chemistry. Okada is 9-2 lifetime against Ospreay now.
Wow.
It's incredible. Yeah, both of Ospreay's wins are in the G1. Actually against Okada. So a cool story to be told there. And of course, the post-match theatrics we will get into. But I mean, going through the last 12 months of Will Ospreay and trying to rank matches, I'm going to have a really hard time doing that. But this year has been insane. I feel like somebody should have chronicled it.
Yeah, it'd be a great idea. Great idea. Hopefully someone's been doing that. Justin, your thoughts?
Yeah, I absolutely love this match. The only ding I would give it is I did think Ospreay's acting during the entrance was a little bit over the top and unnecessary. Like just coming out, you know, basically still caked in blood with the bandage was probably going to be enough. He could tell that story in the match, and he did. My favorite Ospreay matches are the ones where he's kind of forced to slow down and almost wrestle somebody else's style. You think Danielson, you think Darby, and you think here with Okada. Obviously, a big part of that is the story they were telling in these in the C2 final two matches with the blood loss and, you know, and having to wrestle so much. But goddamn, this was good. It's one of those things where you just kind of wish both guys could win. I disagree with Sean about who should have won the C2. I think Okada is probably the right move here. Although, you know, I've been thinking with the way that Ospreay wrestles, you know, his prime is going to probably be a whole lot shorter lived than most guys. And now is probably the time to strike, you know, making him the tippy top guy of your promotion. We can get more into that about, you know, who should be the next AEW champion. But they need to speed that up. Don't waste this guy's prime because he's special. And Okada has never felt more important than he does right now to me. Anyways, obviously he's a huge deal with New Japan, but you know, I'm sure he came over for big bucks. He got a big contract, and that's why you go with him now instead of Kyle Fletcher. You have all the time in the world. You've got, you know, probably 1 or 2 years to truly build Kyle into a main event guy. He's not there yet. You know, one awesome match with Will Ospreay ain't going to do it. Now they've had two. Keep going with it. This is a great feud that can carry your company for a while. But Okada makes the big bucks. He's the big name, and you need to do something special with him. And it makes the Continental title feel all that much more important. You think about the lineage that's already looking to have with Kingston and then Okada. So, yeah, man, I just absolutely loved it. The Continental Classic, absolute smash this year. Possibly, I don't know, compared to last year, I'm going to have to give that one some more thought if I liked it better or not. But holy shit, yeah, this match freaking ruled.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of there with you as far as Kyle Fletcher. You can make the argument, but the way that the brackets lined up, you just couldn't have Ospreay lose to him again. Mm-hmm. And I have kind of the same thought that you got to, Justin. I see John's talking about this in the chat too. I think the time is now to put Ospreay in that world title picture. I just don't really think the Moxley title reign is working at all. Mm-hmm. And I think you go in a new direction. And so what it told me is, like, going to that main event, if you go with Ospreay, then obviously he's Continental champion. He's going to be out of the world title picture for several months, most likely. If you're planning on having him go into the world title scene, then he should lose here. And then you have Okada, you know, doing the Continental thing, but then he's also set up as an eventual challenger to Ospreay, which is a big money match. In the rematch, Fletcher, also a good match as a rematch. He can claim to get a world title shot if Ospreay has the belt, you know, since he's beat him before. So you got that all set up for you. And then obviously, I mean, the big thing that we haven't talked about is Kenny Omega's return. So with Kenny Omega returning, you kind of had to have Okada win to set up what we saw the visual of here, which I'm going to put up on the screen right there. I mean, this is very intentional the way that they shot this, you know, Omega face to face with Okada with the all in backdrop or poster, you know, hanging from the rafters behind them. That is 1000% intentional. I had some tool on Sky earlier today who quote tweeted me on that and was like, oh, this isn't an intentional. Wrestling fans are dumb. I'm like, dude, this is like filmmaking 101. They for sure set that up. They didn't just shoot that from that angle like that just because. They're clearly teasing that match for a stadium show because these guys have had multiple match of the year contenders and winners in the past. I don't know how the hell they're going to live up to what they've done in the past.
Yeah.
But you're looking to sell tickets to the stadium show at All In Texas. I mean, that's a match that will interest people. That will have people driving or flying long distances. So you kind of have to have Okada win just to set that up when Kenny Omega came back. And man, I am so pumped that Kenny Omega is back. This has been one of those things where AEW's been going through these lulls, you know, that they've been missing is one of the founding fathers of AEW, one of the biggest stars, one of the best world champions in the company's history, finally going to be back in the mix after all of the injuries and everything. He's going to return at Wrestle Dynasty at the Tokyo Dome next weekend, but then he's going to be back in AEW. And that is a huge, huge shot in the arm from this promotion. They have really, at different times in their history, really been snake bitten with injuries. Whether it was Punk when he was there, Omega for sure, and now getting Omega back, Justin, this is huge.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. And, you know, and the exciting thing is, where do we go from here? Because they teased that. I agree with you. That was totally intentional. But that's 7 months away. What are we going to see, you know, from Omega until then? What's he going to be up to once, you know, the Wrestle Dynasty match is done and he's back in AEW full time? What's he going to look like ring rust wise, you know, injuries wise? Has he been through too much at this point? It's going to be fascinating to see. And yeah, it just completely re-energizes the entire promotion.
Yeah. He's a Lamborghini with about 160,000 miles on it. So tread lightly if you're going to, yeah, especially with his body. I think he went through so much in New Japan in the 2016, 17, and 18 range. So when he got here, he could wrestle less frequently, but he didn't really change his style too much. I think with Okada also, it's the same thing. He was just trying to take this year to transition in, hone it, slow everything down. Because as Justin mentioned about the Continental Championship, like I looked at that as the number two belt in the promotion when Kingston was defending it. Okada got it. I'm like, I'm excited for this now. And then the brakes just were completely hit on it all. So I think a couple more things. I'm very curious to see Omega Gabe Kidd just to see how much ring rust he truly has. That's going to be a very telltale sign. And we're also going to see the Young Bucks at that same event. So my assumption is when we see Omega, we see the Young Bucks. They're probably going to come back maybe in tandem here mid to late January and just see what type of wrinkle they're going to be thrown into. Do they get thrown headfirst into the Death Rider situation? Jury's out. Remains to be seen.
Yeah.
Well, I think this conversation naturally flows into the Death Rider stuff then in the mm-hmm. the world title picture. So we can talk about that next. You know, the fatal four-way match at the end of the show, having to follow this one here, which, I mean, that's probably part of why people were negative on the main event, is you gotta follow the return of Kenny Omega. You have to follow a match of the year contender in Ospreay and Okada. Obviously, like, the result was probably not in doubt. Like, maybe you could, like, slightly believe that Hangman had a shot, you know, but Jay White, he had no shot. Orange Cassidy, they had no shot at winning the world title here. They're not going to end the reign of Jon Moxley. And, I mean, the match was what I expected. I liked it better than your typical WWE four-way. It was more chaotic. You know, they fought into the crowd. Of course, you had the interference spots with the Death Riders. That's expected. So, I mean, it was pretty much what I thought it was going to be. It wasn't like a great, great match, like I said earlier, but it was fine. You know, it was passable. I think the bigger criticisms are the Death Rider storyline, you know, being, is that working? For me, it's not working. It's just not clicking. Moxley being in the world champion, is that working for you? As I said earlier, it's not working for me. I would pivot off of this. And I would have Ospreay be the guy to beat Jon Moxley, just because if you look at the baby faces who could beat him, it's Swerve. I think it's too soon to go back to Swerve. Mm-hmm. You know, you could make the argument. You could even make the argument for Kenny Omega, depending on how he looks in a couple of months. But Ospreay, like, he seems to be the guy right now. You know, Hangman down the line, I want him to get it back. I don't think that's going to happen right now, just based on his storyline and, you know, all the demons he's dealing with and all of that. So to me, it's Will Ospreay. And, you know, I know they, part of this is they're debuting on Max here coming up at the turn of the year. And Moxley's a recognizable face, you know, who people will recognize as a world champion. But on the flip side, and this is something I was talking with Andrew Zarian about from Matt Men, our friend, good friend of the pod. He was talking about, like, wrestling companies wanting to have world champions that look like superheroes. You know, like, look at Cody. Mm-hmm. Looks like Homelander, right? Made all the jokes over the years. Captain America, you know, like, whatever you want. You know, he is that white meat baby face with the red, white, and blue and everything. Will Ospreay, when he has his entrance gear on, he looks like a superhero. I mean, mm-hmm. I think he fits that mold. And, you know, I've talked about it on the show so many times. I don't want to keep repeating myself. But I really do, I said this last night on the post show, believe that he is a guy with crossover appeal who you could interest new people to if you just showed him the moves, whether that is the reels and the TikToks and everything. But, like, I talked about this on BR last night. Patrons have heard me say this. I'm going to say it one time here on the flagship. I showed my brother-in-law over Christmas clips of Will Ospreay. We were sitting on the couch at my parents' house. Somehow wrestling came up. And I was like, hey, have you heard of AEW? Have you seen Will Ospreay? And I showed him highlights from the AEW YouTube channel of Ospreay and Darby Allin. And he, like, watched it over and over and over.
Nice.
And I've known my sister's now husband since, like, almost 20 years. It's like 2005. He has never been into wrestling. I mean, he's, like, vaguely familiar with it from being a teenager in the 90s. But he was like, oh my God. And he called my sister over and was like, you got to see this guy. And he used the Canadian Destroyer spot in the Derby match. Like, he was replaying that over and over and over. That's just one example. I think that the general public, when they see him, will be drawn in. And so for all of these reasons, also to Justin's point that his career span, hopefully not, but just the way he wrestles, his prime could be short. Just go to it. Like, it's Moxley's not working. Get to Ospreay Moxley and have Ospreay be the guy who's holding AEW hostage. Justin, jump in here.
Yeah, you know, to your point, you know, just talking about casual fans and you know, these guys looking like superheroes, it's also for kids, man. Like, who are the guys that my kid gravitated to? Cody Rhodes, because the way he looks, the red, white, and blue, to your point. And the other two, Ospreay and Darby. Big part of it is the way they look, the way they wrestle. These guys can be candidates to hold your world championship. And, you know, talking about, could the direction for Ospreay be John Moxley? Well, they teased it during the C2. If you're paying attention with the Darby and Will interactions, you know, Darby basically saying, like, you know, why aren't you helping me out with this? And, you know, Ospreay says, I'm concentrating on the tournament now, you know, talk to me when it's over. So that could very well be the direction they're going to go. Darby is that kind of other name, you know, story-wise, that makes a lot of sense to dethrone Moxley. But talking about the Death Riders, big part of the problem was, and, you know, honestly, I agree with you, Ryan, the match was good. The main event, the four-way. The problem was, to, you know, what other people have been saying, was the emotional investment we had going into it just wasn't there. Like, I found myself on my phone a lot during that match, not really paying attention. I didn't really care about the result because it was basically a foregone conclusion. And big problem of that is because, number one, it's still pretty unclear what the hell the Death Riders' intentions in the story are. Like, they're talking about the soul for AEW, while meanwhile, like, nothing has felt like it has changed. And the other thing is, like, they haven't really had a true threat. You know, I love Orange Cassidy. I thought the main event at Full Gear was phenomenal. He's not a true threat. You know, it being this four-way with three guys going after the championship, and it being Jay White, who, you know, again, really like, but he's not going to be winning the world title here. Hangman, fucking love him. But, you know, just the way they're telling this story, it doesn't make sense. And then you have Adam Copeland come in with FTR, and they feel like real threats to Death Riders, for both better and worse. And so hopefully that juices up this story, and we get somewhere with it that's a little bit more palatable. Now the flip side of that is, dear God, I don't want Adam Copeland as my AEW world champion. It should absolutely not fucking be him to be the one who takes down the Death Riders. I think, you know, this is something you could go with for a couple months and really build up the Death Riders by having them, you know, get over on rated FTR. God, I hate that shit. But I am kind of worried that might be the main event of Revolution. It would be Copeland and Moxley. I was really hoping to get this storyline done by then, and that is not the way I want to see it done. Now, like I said, maybe this feud juices it up and they can carry it out a little bit longer. So, yeah, better and worse, Copeland coming back. I'm with you, Ryan. Let's do Ospreay. Even if this storyline has to go beyond Revolution, and maybe that happens at Double or Nothing or something. And then there's that lingering threat of Christian Cage. Again, love him. I have no interest in seeing him as the next world champion. I saw a really funny comment talking about this main event match where, you know, they were cutting to shots of Christian in the crowd, and they're also cutting to shots of Hook for some reason. And somebody brought up, that'd be like during that fatal four-way match with Austin, Brett, Vader, and Undertaker, they'd be cutting to Headbanger Mosh in the crowd during that match. Hook ain't that guy, everybody. He ain't that guy. So that's kind of where I'm at right now with Ospreay, the world title scene, and, you know, this main event match.
Yeah. Doesn't it? It feels like with Christian, like, nobody even takes it seriously. It's like, oh yeah, Christian has the contract, but it's like, who cares? You know, I never really liked that stipulation to begin with. Go ahead, Jesse.
Let's start with the Death Riders. I am concerned with the Moxley matches that it's going to become Roman Reigns' bloodline formulaic, where we could see either a ref bump, or we're definitely going to see the rest of his crew out there. There's going to be interference until the end of time. And as we just talked about, it's going to get super stale. I saw a lot of timeline stuff that said this was kind of a WWE style main event. Mm-hmm. And I have to agree. And that's a big reason why I downgraded this to a B+, was seeing FTR come out, I was cool with it, of course, because I mean, that's tied into the story with Collision. They're going to Asheville here on Wednesday. And but then Adam Copeland's music hits and he comes out and he all of a sudden kind of looks at as an imposing threat. And I'm seeing people on the timeline going, ooh, maybe Adam Copeland will defeat Jon Moxley for the AEW world title. And I about crapped my pants on the spot. I said, this is what you have to get away from. You got to get away from World Wrestling Entertainment logic. Mm-hmm. You need to go with, we've mentioned it already, Will Ospreay, Swerve Strickland. Those are your two. You could maybe shoehorn Hangman in there. I'm okay with Darby even taking it off of Moxley at this point, as long as it's not Adam Copeland, which leads to Christian Cage cashing in on him again. Again, that's stuff that we saw 10, 15 years ago from World Wrestling Entertainment. It scares me. I hope Tony's not thinking that way. So
the hope is that if we do get this Moxley Copeland match at Revolution, is that Copeland loses, Christian cashes in, but then Copeland costs him that cash. And so that way you can get rid of that stupid contract and, you know, maybe carry on this Christian and Copeland feud for a while.
That is easily the way to go.
Yeah. I've seen the stuff speculating about Revolution too. I would do the match earlier because I think it's a match that can pull in a number maybe for him on Max. They're going to, just like WWE's doing with Netflix, they're going to be promoting bigger Dynamite shows now, being on HBO Max. You know, it starts with this first one. You know, I had no problem with Copeland making the return at the end because we all knew it was going to be him on Dynamite, just the way it's been built and where it was at. But I think they just wanted to be able to officially promote his name in advance. So now they're doing that. It's going to be a good way, I think, just because that's a name known to people outside of AEW from being fans over the last 20 years, if at least maybe the name's not known, but if you see his face. So I don't have any problem doing that six man on the first Dynamite that is on the simulcast with Max. I think that's totally fine, but mm-hmm. I would build a Dynamite match between Moxley and Copeland. And then I would do exactly what you proposed, Justin, to get this stuff with Christian, you know, totally out of the way. Yeah. The end of the show, it did feel like the end of a Dynamite or something, the way they set that up. But you know, they're treating this upcoming Dynamite, on Max almost like a mini pay-per-view just based on it being a huge opportunity for the company.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be nice. Again, they'll be the first one to hit the streaming service first because WWE is going to follow in suit on Monday the 6th. We got that going. And then here's another point I wanted to hammer home with Copeland and Moxley. Just the whole reason why the Death Riders are doing what they're doing is they're trying to make AEW realize that like there's nobody even worthy of taking this championship. There's like everybody's just very egotistical. The one thing that has me concerned is that why do you have a guy who's only been in the company for a year, maybe two, who's in his 50s defending mm-hmm. AEW when it should be somebody from the core? Yep. FTR has only been gone. I mean, I think they showed up maybe a full year after, which I'm okay with that. That's cool. They can tie off with Wheeler, with Claudio, with Pac. Go ahead. Find somebody to trios with. But no, you need somebody who's homegrown, not somebody who, again, just came over and has been like trying to put his stake into the All Elite Wrestling post for whatever reason when he's been a World Wrestling Entertainment person for nearly three decades.
Yeah, yeah. All good points. Like I said, I get it from a business advertising perspective. Logically, what you're saying is absolutely true. It shouldn't be these guys. It should be someone more from the core. And, you know, like I think what we're building towards here is probably when the Bucks and Omega get back and then that mm-hmm. kind of being a whole thing. So, you know, we'll see. I wanted to talk about the Christian thing in conjunction with Adam Cole and MJF because doesn't it kind of feel like Christian being the guy waiting in the wings with that contract and everything that he's kind of taken MJF's spot in some ways, being that kind of smarmy heel near the top of the world title picture? Like there's only kind of room for one of those guys. And Christian's kind of been doing like what would be the MJF spot. And, you know, MJF has been down in this feud with Adam Cole, and hopefully we're totally done with that. We can move on because I mean, this match, the match was fine, but like the story has been going on for like over a year, a long time, just because of the injury to Cole and everything. But like, I really, really hope that this was the end of all of this. Did you see this match, Jesse?
No, I did not. Okay. What I'm hoping, I'll be quick. What I was hoping for was when MJF put the boots to Adam Cole at Double or Nothing and just left him in a heap and said, "You're not worthy, get out of my ring." I thought that was the end of it.
Yeah.
It wasn't.
Would have been fine with me. Then we might have even said that on the pod at the time. I can't remember, but like, there you go. Write it off. Let's move on. But instead, you know, here we are. God, Justin, is this the end?
It's got to be. I think they have to know that people aren't really interested in this story. It's funny, if you look at Cage Match for the match ratings, that one is kind of by far the lowest, which says a lot, because I don't think it really was the worst match on this card. It was a perfectly acceptable match. It's just, you know, kind of to our point about people not being emotionally invested in the Death Riders angle right now. They're not emotionally invested in that story that should have taken place a year ago. So it's time to move on. I'm a little worried because this Undisputed Kingdom, they're going to be like what, the fourth tier of factions in this promotion. And I thought we were going to get a turn. I thought that's what they were teasing with, you know, Kyle O'Reilly or Strong, and nope, they just reunited the Undisputed Kingdom. And poor Adam Copeland, to your point about like, should MJF be where Christian is? It's like, yeah, because that's how he's best suited. Well, unfortunately for Adam Cole, that's kind of also what he would be best suited for, is being in that position. But he's just right now not as good at it as MJF or Christian.
Yeah. I was kind of hoping that the Undisputed Kingdom afterwards would like beat down Cole, and that would be his next feud. But
yeah, agree.
Yep. Nothing yet. I don't really have any deep thoughts on the match. It was fine. Maybe even a little long, about 15 minutes. MJF wins with the low blow, and the Heat Seeker retains the Dynamite Diamond Ring. Again, give us something fresh now. Let's move on. So, I continue to really be impressed by Powerhouse Hobbs. Yeah. I got to say, as a guy who has clearly been putting in the work to improve his craft, you know, we've talked about it on the show, with him being like the one guy you see out there when you go to television tapings for months now, like watching every match of the show, usually sitting on a stool by the hard cam all by himself. Like we saw at Collision, like we saw at Dynamite back in June. He's clearly been putting in the work, and man, he looked really good out there with Takeshita. I really enjoyed that match. I mean, I almost believe that maybe they'd even have him win.
Yeah.
I thought maybe like it was possible, but you know, Takeshita retains, but it was a fun match, Justin.
You know, the thing that you can say about this match is that the crowd wasn't really into it, but both wrestlers pulled the crowd into it, and the crowd was invested by the end of it. Cause they, I think, started to believe that maybe Hobbs could do this too, even though it felt like Takeshita was, you know, pretty easily going to win this. So yeah, Hobbs is really good, man. And it'll be interesting to see where he goes from here, because you know, that main event scene is loaded and there's no way he's touching that. He's going to have some work cut out for him, especially, you know, just coming back and now losing to Takeshita. Where does he go from here? But yeah, I really dug this match. You know, again, it was one of those, like, probably won't really remember it 6 months from now, but it's a solid, you know, at least 3-star match, not, you know, maybe 3.5. And when you fill out your pay-per-views with those kind of matches, you know, that ain't a bad thing.
Yeah. I mean, good building block match for him, you know, showing it. He can be in there with a guy who can really go like Takeshita and have a, this match is over 16 minutes. It was a long match.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
A little bit slower pace as you would expect, but yeah, solid match. So yeah, I enjoyed that. The two women's matches were different. I was looking at the cage match ratings here, and again, I haven't put out my ratings yet, but I actually disagree with the cage match ratings on this one. On cage match, Mercedes and Statlander is rated higher than Mariah May and Thunder Rosa. I actually enjoyed the Mariah May Rosa match more.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. I thought this was not as good as Full Gear. I mean, that was an outstanding match between Mercedes and Stat. This one, got a little sloppy at the end when they went into all those like pinfall reversals and stuff. Mm-hmm. I thought the pin just kind of came out of nowhere and it looked like they missed. I don't know if they messed something up, but it didn't flow very well. Didn't care for the finish. Thought it went a little bit long too. This was like a 24 and a half minute long match, which I think was a little, and you know, it was the, yeah, by far the longest match on the show. The next closest was 19 with Okada and Ospreay. 24 and a half. I thought it just lost something. It was still a good match. It just wasn't as good as their previous one. I thought Mariah May and Thunder Rosa was really fun. You know, a different type of match with the weapons and everything, but like Mariah was super entertaining going over there to Thunder Rosa's father and getting, you know, the cane and everything and mocking him. And they've protected her really well, you know, looking like this unstoppable force. And I guess we're just kind of waiting for the rematch with Tony down the line, which is probably months off still. Oh, but they've, like I said, they've made her look dominant. I think the original expectation would be that they would do the match at the Australia show. We'll see if they get there in time, but I don't know, man. Maybe I need a rewatch. I was watching this with some at a friend's house at this point in time in the night. But in the moment, I actually enjoyed Mariah May and Thunder Rosa more.
Yeah, you know what would have put it over the top is if, you know, we got blood or kind of blood in the MJF and Adam Cole matches. That needed to be in the Mariah May and Thunder Rosa match. I think that would have really put it over the top. Thunder and Mariah suffered from, you know, the outcome being inevitable, and perhaps the investment going in wasn't quite there either. Whereas with Statlander and Mercedes Moné, once again, I agree with you. The match at Full Gear was better. That match was epic because of what happened throughout the match. This one, you could tell they were trying to make an epic match. And the over 20 minutes was very purposeful. That was, I believe, the first time an AEW women's match has gone over 20 minutes. So it just felt a little forced, and you could feel that during the course of the match. Having said that, I still liked it. I would actually put Statlander and Mercedes just a hair over Thunder Rosa and Mariah May. I liked it just a bit more, probably because I was a little bit more invested in it. And I thought the outcome was a little bit more in question, you know, because now Mercedes is up 2-0. Would they have just given the title to Statlander to even it up, especially considering the work she's been doing has just been tremendous. So, two absolutely rock-solid women's matches on this card.
Yeah, I'll rewatch, and my opinion might change on the rewatch because I wasn't paying super close attention, but as I was watching it, that was my initial reaction at least. So
and I will say, I gasped twice during this show. The first was the last ride powerbomb that Fletcher gave to Ospreay in the opening match. I was like, holy shit, it almost looked like Ospreay just Fletcher almost just broke Ospreay's neck. And then the second time was Mercedes with that belly to belly pile driver, the tombstone on the ring apron. I was like, oh my God, I think she just killed Statlander. That's one of those instances where screwing up a move and not really doing it correct actually makes it look more impactful. Just tremendous stuff.
Go ahead, Jesse.
Statlander's cradle pile driver, by the way, that put Cody Rhodes out of action for a couple of weeks. I mean, didn't get the job done to Mercedes Moné, though, did it? So, no, I like that match a lot. I'd say it was, probably maybe a quarter star less than their original Full Gear confrontation. These two have great chemistry together, and they had me fooled because I was thinking, because Chris has been working so well over the last few months, that I thought she was going to take the title from her on this night. But I guess, I have yet to see Mariah May or Thunder Rosa just yet. So when I get into that, I'll be paying pretty close attention. But yeah, as Justin said, first AEW women's match ever to go over 20 minutes. And they're doing it for a reason. They're really pushing Mercedes. She has been on a roll for the last few months. So she's going to try to carry that momentum into 2025 with a revamped women's division. So yeah, kudos to that match. And again, looking forward to seeing Mariah and Thunder later.
Real quick, just talking about the time of matches and whatnot, and to Ryan's original point about AEW, you know, being graded on a scale. I saw people complain, it was only 3.5 hours. Like, what the hell happened? It's like, you know, they ended it at 10:30 and it was early. It's like, what do you guys want from them? I don't get, you know, otherwise you'd be complaining it went too long. It's like, oh fuck, every pay-per-view's got to go past 11 o'clock. It's like, shut the fuck up.
You're not kidding. Now people are complaining that it was too short. Yep. Yeah, I liked it. It wrapped a half hour earlier and the card was a little tighter than usual. But yeah, last thing I just wanted to say, I really like the finish in Mariah and Thunder with the Storm Zero through the table. I thought that was a great finish.
Great spot.
Better finish than Mercedes and Stat, where they, like I was talking about, kind of, it seemed like it got lost a little bit in what they were doing for the finish there. But yeah, both good matches on cage match. Monet and Statlander is 2 points higher than May and Thunder Rosa, and I don't agree with that. I don't think it was that wide of a discrepancy, but you know, both fun matches. I enjoyed both of them. And yeah, I think we've talked about the whole card, haven't we? Yeah, I mean, I didn't really see much of the pre-show personally. I don't know if you guys had any thoughts on that, but
nope, it happened.
Yeah, Jeff Jarrett, QT Marshall most definitely happened.
Yeah. Tony Storm opened the pay-per-view, taking on Layla Gray. I mean, that was the result of that was never in doubt. But
quick, kind of just out of nowhere, just something I'd thought about last night is I'm kind of shocked that Okada isn't on this Wrestle Dynasty card. That show seems to be lacking a main event, and you would think, you know, put him on there against about anybody, and then you would got to bring in some more fans that, you know, have been probably itching to see him since he hasn't been there in a year.
Yeah.
I think with that, I was just going to say, I mean, no Ospreay either. No Jay White. Nah, not bringing any back of the old New Japan contingent, except for Omega and the Bucks. Ricochet too.
Yeah. Well, maybe they asked Okada and he flipped them off. Just gave him the thing. And that was right that. Said,
bitch.
Yeah, so yeah, that was World's End. It was again, it was a fun show. I think it was better than last year's World's End for sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah, fun night. And now we don't really know the details of what AEW pay-per-views are going to look like moving forward. They haven't, at least unless there was something this morning I missed, they haven't talked about exactly how that is going to work. You know, they've been very cagey when people have asked about how is Max going to impact the pay-per-view pricing, because I'm sure if it's going to be cheaper, or if it's going to be included with Max, or there's going to be a small fee. They wanted to make sure people paid $50 for this one before they find out they're about to become cheaper. But I obviously want them to be cheaper, but I've never felt like I was ripped off buying an AEW pay-per-view. Yep. But moving to Max, this is going to be great. Just having the archive of all the television up on there and being able to easily go back and watch anything. I'm looking forward to January 1st and a whole new year of wrestling, a new year of Top Rope Nation, all kinds of stuff coming up.
Yes, sir. Exciting times. Wrestling is pretty great right now all around.
Yes. And we're going to have a Saturday night's main event again to talk about in January. We've got the Rumble coming up early February. So big things on the horizon. We've got our next Top Rope Nation Classics topic decided, which will drop in the next couple of weeks. That's going to be Starcade 88.
Ooh. So
go back in time to the 80s. It feels like it's been a while since we've done the 80s.
Nice.
So we'll be going back to Starcade 88 on our next Top Rope Nation Classics. And you guys can join us for that by becoming a patron, or you can become a member here on our YouTube channel. It's a little cheaper. It's $2.99. You get access to the video versions of the Top Rope Nation Classics bonus shows. You know, it's for some people more convenient to have the podcast version, which you get on Patreon, and also the video format, also the unplugs, all you get more on Patreon. But if you just want the classic shows and you want to watch them on video, you know, right there in your YouTube app, you can join for $2.99, become a channel member right here. Just go to our channel homepage and you should be able to join up. I believe the last like 2 to 2.5 years of classic shows are there. Sometimes my instant reaction shows are posted here to YouTube. Like the one I did last night is here on the channel for members right now in video form. So you can check that out if you want. Some of Jesse's unplugged shows are here on the YouTube channel as well for members. So just another way that you guys can support what we do and get access to some of that bonus content if you so choose.
Got some fun stuff coming down the pipeline. ECW 1995.
Ooh.
30 years, and I've, like I said, I've got the full month of January already covered. For those, Frank Pediani, who's a friend of the show, he's going to be doing WWF and WCW 1995 on Pro Wrestling Zen and Now all year long. So we're going to be comparing notes. He's going to hop on a show with me because he's going to cover a couple of ECW shows with Todd Martin, who's a very acclaimed columnist over there too. So yeah, there's going to be a lot to look forward to. And then, yeah, what's going to come down the pipeline here in 2025? A lot.
Yeah. There you go. So things on the horizon. We'll be here with you guys in the new year. I don't know if there's going to be a flagship later this week. It might be next week, just with the new year and things getting a little bit busy. But we wanted to make sure to put this show out for you. If you're missing us later this week, listen to the recent classic show on Patreon. I'm definitely going to put a teaser of that out on our main podcast feed here at the end of the week, so you guys can hear a little snippet of that if you're not members. But again, we'd love to have your support. And it's about 2 hours, so that should tide you over if it's next week that we do the next flagship show. So that's all I have, ladies and gentlemen. Been fun getting the trio back together for this show. And you can follow the show on social media. We're on Blue Sky at Top Rope Nation. We're on Threads. We're on Instagram, Twitter X, Facebook group. Search Top Rope Nation Pro Wrestling Discussion. Get in that Facebook group. I always say that on these shows. And yeah, that's all I got. We will be talking to you guys again real soon. Have a great week and Happy New Year.
See you in 25.
What's up?
I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
This just in, hot off the bench press. Planet Fitness has added new strength equipment. Save $28 or more when you join today, and you can be one of the first to try it out. We're raising the bar with new benches, and our new hack squat will have you actually looking forward to leg day. Plus, we're still repping all of the best-in-class equipment we've always had, with most clubs open 24 hours, so you can work out your way on your time. So let's do this. Join Planet Fitness today and save $28 or more. Just $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends January 10th. See Home Club for details.